Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening, and welcome to Yada Yada Radio. We're here with both Kirk and JD. And this evening, we're going to begin where we left off last week, which was in the very end of the presentation of Yeshaya 53, which presents the role that Yahweh's soul and the sacrificial lamb, the Passover lamb, paid in fulfilling the promises that Yahweh had made to Abraham. And the reason we turn to that story is because with the meeting that Abraham and Yitzchak have on Mount Moriah, celebrating Passover, can only be understood in the context of how Yahweh fulfilled his promise of providing the lamb. And that's the moral of the story, the thing that everyone misses, that, you know, no, I will provide the lamb. And the way that the lamb was provided by Yahweh is therefore detailed in Yeshaya 53. And very seldom are these two things connected. And yet, without making that connection, they cannot be understood. So here's the last two statements of Yeshaya 53. It's the 53:11 says, out of the difficult and miserable toil, this is them all. This is a distressing experience and tremendous effort, an extraordinarily unpleasant and grievously wicked undertaking. Now, for something to be that bad, we're not talking about the Roman whips at this point. We're not talking about the experience on the upright pole of Esau. This is the miserable experience, is the suffering that Yahweh's soul endured in Sheol. And it says, of his soul. Now, the fact is, of his soul, a guy, not only a clue, but if you have a clue and you read that correctly translated, you can't remain a Christian. It's just over. Because it doesn't say his body. It says his soul. There are a lot of Hebrew words for body. But nefesh, soul, is a very clear term. It means soul. And so there's no way that you can get your Jesus' soul suffering. Not his soul. Was his body. His body was the Passover lamb. So for the most grievous of the torments to be afflicting his soul means that something happened after his body was served as the Passover lamb. And if that's not the case, then let it, say it was the case. So the very notion that it says this miserable toil, this difficult and distressing experience, was of his soul, you've got no chance of the Christian crucifixion being the remedy. You've got no chance of God dying. This is the crux, literally, of Christianity, and it is destroyed, this simply. And then it says, he will abundantly and continually see the light. So after this experience of toil, it says he's going to see the light. Well, he is now his soul. Mm-hmm. When did his soul see the light?
When it came out.
Bakurim.
Yeah, Bakurim. Now what you have here is this transition. The lamb is Pesach. The difficulty and miserable toll of his soul is Matzah. And then his soul sees the light, or Bakurim. So we have a celebration of all 3 days. Abundantly overflowing and providing complete satisfaction. That's the purpose of the set-apart spirit that is in. She is the bringer of this light. She is the one who is providing abundantly overflowing and complete satisfaction. She does for us. She did for him. That is the purpose of being immersed in the light. And to be immersed in Yahweh's light today is to be immersed in the set-apart spirit. Sabbath is an interesting word, too, because it is not just complete and full, but it's related to Shabbat, mm-hmm. which is the promise of seven. By way of knowing and understanding him, isn't this wonderful that this is not by faith in him? This is by Dayat. Dayat is empirical knowledge. It is a study of the facts that leads to a conclusion. By way of knowing and understanding him, my servant, Ebed, my co-worker, will make righteous and upright, absolutely acquitted and vindicated, totally and completely right. Many, because their guilt he shall bear. Now, there is just so much meat in this, and it begins with just simple words like nefesh being his soul, not his body. Ra'ah. Ra'ah not only means to see, but a Ra'ah is also a shepherd. He's going to witness these things. And it's his light, the light that he's going to see, that is going to be Saba, provide this overwhelming abundance. That's how we're enriched and empowered on the Bukurim. This is helping you explain the next step in Yahweh's plan. But there are a few words as empowering in this context is Dayat. Dayat is, you know, is related to Yada. Yada means to know in a sense of to appreciate, to acknowledge, to accept. It's a relational knowing. Dayat is rational knowing.
Comprehension.
So it is by rational knowing these facts. It's not by forming a relationship with Jesus. No. It's by rationally knowing the facts that Yahweh, as Yahweh is presenting them here, that leads to being right. Not by forming a relationship with him. Not by following him. It's not by worshiping him. It's not by believing him. It's not by faith. It's not by acquiescing to a church. It is strictly by empirical knowledge, rational thinking, putting the facts together and understanding them, that we are made right. And it's also interesting that, you know, Christians want to present their Jesus as God. In fact, I saw a sign today, Jesus is Lord, worship him.
Huh. Wrong, wrong, wrong.
Sorry, but that's just not, yeah, wrong, wrong, wrong on all accounts. And here Yahweh saying, hey, he's my servant, my coworker.
I can't help but juxtapose this with one of my favorite verses, which is Hosea 4:6, where he tells us that his people are destroyed as a result of a lack of Deot, belly Deot, a lack of knowledge.
Right.
And that they have avoided and rejected Deot. So here he's telling us that that's the key to life, and there he's telling us if you reject that, you will die.
Right. And here he's saying just the opposite. If you have knowledge regarding the role of the Pesach lamb, how Yahweh's soul fulfills matzah, and how he was reunited with the lights to fulfill the Kudum, if you understand that, that knowledge will lead and cause you to be right. Righteous, upright, vindicated. So you're right, this is the positive variation of the negative warning. This is the antidote for not knowing. Yes. It's wonderful to juxtapose these two. But just think about this, that Yahweh used the term my servant.
Mm-hmm.
My coworker, my associate. Pretty hard to post up Jesus as the Lord.
To be a Lord.
Under those circumstances. He will make, and this is the thing that's so powerful about this. Sadak. Sadak may be in the top 10 most important words in the Torah prophets of Psalm. At its core, Sadak means to be right. So, by extrapolation...
That's the one you want to be called.
And there's nothing better than being called Sadak. And if you're Sadak, you are right and righteous. You are upright and correct. You are vindicated and acquitted. So this is the best it gets. This is Sadak. We'll make righteous and upright, declaring absolutely acquitted and vindicated, to be completely innocent, and totally, completely right. And what he did is he bore the guilt of men. That's why it is a Yahweh, after doing this, could vindicate those of us who were guilty. Because he paid the penalty himself. He accepted, incurred, and was burdened with and carried away our awon, our liability, the consequence of us being wrong, our perversity, our depravity. Awon is a pretty rotten term. And it's a collective wrong. This wrong is not an individual wrong. This is not, I'm going to confess my sin. No. This is societal wrong, awon. This is religious malfeasance, political malfeasance, military malfeasance. This is not about individual sin. It's as insightful a passage as there is.
When you translate it meaning, and it is, that's not all. I mean, he didn't die for everyone. This doesn't cover everyone's sin. These are people who go a particular way.
Right.
So, I mean, this whole thing that we've gone through, the journey, if I may, Yahshua is pointing out that Yahshua is a servant. He's a hand. A hand is not you. It's an extension of you. It's the right hand. He's obviously a diminished manifestation. He is not a virgin birth. We've learned he is ordinary. He's not striking in any way. He never quotes anything but the Torah. He never points anybody in any direction other than the Torah. And by the time you go through your list of this, and this, you have a totally different picture. Obviously, he's not part of the Godhead, or the Christian view of he's a God, or he didn't die to take over, become the new God, like Talmud. It just rips Christianity apart.
Yeah, this statement is devastating to religion. And yet it's so affirming of a plan that Yahweh has delineated, because it walks the reader through the three stages of Pesach, Matzah, and Mekorah. So it's like so many things that God does. It presents the truth in a way that enables us to understand and be right, but it also shatters the lies of religion and politics. Anything else you'd like to add, guys?
Ruby? One other thing I'd register. Oh, I'm sorry, did I interrupt?
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that when I was reading this week, I turned to Yeshayahu 17, you know, where he's talking about Damascus. And when he's talking about that, he talks about, once again, he's talking about these people he will never regard or look upon religious altars. Asherah, Mother of God, Queen of Heaven, Lord Baal or Easter. I mean, everywhere you turn in Yeshayahu, which used to be, when I was a Christian, I was told that Yeshayahu is all about Jesus, confirming Christianity. Everything in Yeshayahu is walk away from Christianity. I hate this stuff. No way you can read it and come to any other conclusion. So
yeah,
just blows me away.
Yep, it is pretty amazing. Yeah, and yet you have the gall of religion. JB sent me that article where the Pope decided that he would contradict God, where Pope Numbskull came out today, said that from a Catholic point of view, you must
be strong in every case.
From a Catholic point of view, there's no wiggle room here. The Pope has said, therefore, it is official church doctrine that the death penalty is wrong in every case. I'm going to tell you that Roman Catholicism's fixation with killing people and torturing them and their implement of torture and death were extraordinarily perverse. And I'm not a fan, personally, of the death penalty. And I've changed on this over time. And the reason I'm not a fan of the death penalty now is because of the fact that way too many people are wrongly convicted.
Yes.
So someone's life in a judicial system is screwed up as ours, where so many people are wrongly convicted, and where the law enforcement and the Justice Department will sometimes deliberately prosecute and condemn an innocent person. Under those circumstances, I'm not a proponent of the death penalty. But to say that it is official religious doctrine to be opposed to the death penalty in all cases would be to be in conflict with God, because God says there are things that humans can do that are so disorienting, so inappropriate, so misleading, that the only proper response is to is the death penalty. And as a matter of fact, you know, in the millennial Shabbat, the death penalty exists. If a person decides that during the millennial Shabbat that they're going to preach religious lies, they're going to be killed. So, it's just amazing how people, yeah, take the opposite view of God and pretend like that somehow. Honestly, therefore, as a result of him, I will apportion and dispense everyone's share, shalach, with many in abundance, and with the empowered, he will share and apportion that which is valuable, based upon an ordinary, sequential, and rational arrangement. Because to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, he exposed and poured out, thereby eliminating the destructive vulnerabilities associated with the plague of death. At the end of this is amazing because Yahweh uses the term plague of death, Moed, to assail Shaul, Paul, and Christianity. And so this, rather than this affirming the validity of Christianity, it's affirming that it is the remedy for Christianity, from God's point of view.
Yeah.
That's pretty sobering there. So, if we just consider the words that comprise this, can. This is right. This is correct. This is just. This is proper. Now, normally, can be a throwaway, and it's right. Well, then God says, the role of Pesach, Matzah, and Bekodim, and said, if you have a proper understanding of that, if you know how all these things fit together and can reach a rational conclusion, then you're going to be right. If you understand the role that his soul played during Matzah, you're going to be right and vindicated. And then now to underscore that by saying, honestly, therefore, this is correct, this is just, this is proper. Ken is a very powerful term here. Because what God is saying is it would be improper for him to be capricious. You know, this notion that God wants to save everybody. Bull. He doesn't. What God wants to do is to be honorable and honest and forthright and dependable and reliable and truthful in those he does save and those he vindicates. And by he himself fulfilling this role as the Pesach Lamb, as the means to unleaven our souls of religious sin, and then of being the first to celebrate first fruits, by him doing all of those things, then God can honestly and honorably and properly allocate the benefits of the covenants to those who accept his terms and conditions. It means that using this plan, God is no longer capricious. He isn't going to choose who to save because of the condition of their heart, because of the depth of their faith, because they did more good things than bad things, because they were basically a good person. Rubbish. The criterion that God can now properly apply is a rational understanding of the means that he has deployed to accomplish this. That's what's proper. That's what's certain. This is a very cerebral and heady consequence here. As a result of him, I will apportion and disperse everyone's share. Shalom. What's the covenant all about? If you were to get right to the heart of the covenant, what is the covenant's purpose?
Build a family.
And
to share with the family, to have them elevate them, to be more
right.
Like him.
Yeah, now Yahweh has a term for that. He offered it to Abraham a number of times, and Abraham went, I don't get it. Inheritance. When you are the son or daughter of a abundantly powerful or wealthy individual, the inheritance is substantial. But if you are now the son or daughter of the creator of the universe, that inheritance is extraordinary. And so what he's talking about here is an inheritance. What do we inherit by becoming children of the covenant? Well, we inherit.
All that it has to do.
Right. We inherit becoming immortal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a good thing. We inherit becoming perfected, so we don't have any flaws. We inherit being adopted into his family. We inherit enrichment and empowerment and enlightenment. These are the things that we're inheriting. It is a real shame, I think, fellas, ladies and gentlemen that are listening to, that Christianity has dumbed all this down to salvation as a gift of God. But God so loved the world that he gave his only son that whoever should believe in him would be saved. No, to the world, that's the worst of the world. God is in love. And salvation is such a meaningless concept. You know, I've done some things in my life, like I got hit by a tsetse fly in Rhodesia, overlooking Rhodesia Falls at midnight during a full moon when they have all these swirling rainbows. I got bit by a tsetse fly. That day, I got a tsetse fly, had malaria. And, you know, I thought I was going to die. I learned it. And yet, by getting malaria, I was spared because the flight I was on from Cairo indirectly to Tel Aviv in Israel, I was not allowed, because I looked so bad, issued on the flight. And everybody on that flight was killed. 77 people. And so I was saved from that. Now that's, from my perspective, okay, that was okay. I'm glad I was saved from that. But that is like 1 billionth of what I've inherited. It's kind of like an afterthought. It's just a shame that you know, they talk about salvation and they don't say saved to what? Saved from what? You know, very few people are saved from hell.
Because most aren't in danger of
it. Hell are never saved. See, that's one of the most amazing things. If you're one of those people that are headed to Sheol, you'll never be saved. You can't be saved. The only people that can be saved are those who are going to end up in oblivion, with their souls eliminated. Those who are going to Sheol can't be saved from. So, and salvation, you know, saved for what? By whom? For what reason? To what benefit? And by saying inheritance here, God has completely changed the perspective. Inheritance is always and without exception understood from a family dynamic. Our children inherit what we as parents pass on to them. It is entirely a parents-to-child transaction. It is 100% family-oriented. And if you're in the right kind of family, what the children inherit is vastly more than money. And the money is a small part of it. The inheritance is character, confidence, compassion, a thirst for knowledge, a passion to know who God is and what He's offered, a thirst for His Word. An ability to think, to reason, to be rational. Okay. A proper education. A sense of family. There are so many things that we inherit when our parents are good, when they're right, that are extraordinarily beneficial. Well, just think about a son that has been circumcised and inheriting that from their mother and father, setting them in the right direction, preparing them for a relationship with Yahweh. Just think of what your daughter is inheriting from you and Patty, JB. Mm-hmm. The knowledge and love of His Word. But the moment you start talking about an inheritance, now you're only discussing the context of the covenant. Now the entire focus is right back to Abraham and Yahweh offering Abraham an inheritance in the context of the covenant family relationship. And now you've got something that provides perspective and understanding, context, and is infinitely better than salvation. Yeah, parents save their children from harm. But that's a small part of what they do. So this one word, If you don't skip over it, if you really think about it, it does so much for you because it takes you right back to God's initial offering to Abraham. I'm going to give you an inheritance. Well, this is that inheritance. And it was just explained because it said his soul was satisfied by the light. How did Yahweh explain to Abraham that you're going to get your inheritance? Didn't he take him to the light of the stars?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That satisfied and fulfilled his soul? And there's a connection there.
Yeah.
Particularly in the context of an inheritance, which is exactly why Yahweh took Abraham there. Abraham said, I don't get why you're offering me an inheritance. I don't have a kid. And so Yahweh explained it to him in the sense of light. And here, just prior to this, it says that his soul was fulfilled and satisfied by the light. That's the connection, particularly in the context of Tolak.
You know what the last letter is, right?
The Q.
Horizon to the light coming up. A new horizon.
Right, a new horizon. Yeah, the Q is. Okay, so we say this tongue in cheek. Yahweh teaches. He created the alphabet for his language. He doesn't miss a trick.
No.
So this, the last letter here, is the sun rising on the horizon.
Good.
Yeah. And by the way, when Yahweh returns, which direction do you have to be facing to see him return?
He's going to be coming from the east.
That is correct. Rising on the horizon, right?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't miss a trick. It's all there.
Yeah.
And by the way, the letter before the horizon, what's that one?
That's the lamb. Leadership. He's leading you too down the path.
Right. I'm leading you too.
And the first one is the sense of protection.
Yeah.
So you have protection, you have leadership, leading you, direction, guiding you to the light, to become the light. Wow.
Correct.
What a word, huh?
What a word. And abundance. Baha Rab. Lavishly and extensively. Now, God's, everything he does well. Life is just so magnificent. Animal life, plant life. Life is so magnificent. The universe is so magnificent. So wondrous. Everything Yahweh does is done in lavishly, extensively, in abundance. And with the empowered, I like this because that light that immersed his soul when he was reunited with the light, what does light do? E equals mc squared. Light is empowering by the square of the speed of light. So for a mortal physical being, there is nothing more empowering than being immersed in light. What is the purpose, the primary purpose of Shavuah?
To be reconciled with him.
Well, the primary purpose of Shavuah is enriched in power.
Enriched in light, I'm sorry, yeah.
Enriched power. Empowered in light. Right. Enriched, empowered in light. That's the purpose of Shavuah. So, and with the empowered, with the beneficiaries of Shavuah, he will share and apportion that which is valuable. It's my conclusion here. Open again to constructive criticism.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my conclusion here that Yahweh has focused initially, as he should, on the role of the Pesach Lamb in Yeshayah 53. It's the role of the Passover Lamb. And he makes that abundantly clear. And then he transitions from the role of the Passover Lamb to the role his soul played on Matzah. And what he had to endure so that we could be right. So that we were no longer wrong in terms of our relationship with God. We were right. And he has just transitioned to his soul being satisfied by the light that is to be adopted into Yahweh's family to become his sons and daughters, become ever more like him. Bukurim. So then, where does that take us to? That takes us to being empowered, to receiving a share, like a portion of that which is valuable based on an orderly, sequential, and rational arrangement. Well, what is the orderly and rational arrangement that follows Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim? What happens on Shavua?
We're enlightened and empowered.
What did he just say?
Enlightened and empowered. I was thinking when I read this yesterday, I was thinking, you know, he's going to put the Torah in your heart at the end of this, or when we die. And in the middle of the Torah is or. So, and it's just middle on middle on middle. Everything, you know, back to your point a minute ago, everything, any way you cut it, it still comes out the same thing.
Yes. But you know, I've been one, and I owe Yahweh an apology. And I think he's laughing at me at the moment. And that's okay. I have said that I have struggled to understand and appreciate why God wasn't more deliberate, more in our faith in saying, here's the purpose of Pesach, here's the purpose of Matzah, here's the purpose of Bukurim, here's the purpose of Shavuah. Here's how these things relate to the covenant and the covenant's benefits, and here's how I'm fulfilling each of them and how you should come to observe them through the process of understanding. And I have said, you know, why did we have to translate these things and then make these connections to deduce these insights? Why didn't Yahweh just make it easier? And that's why he's laughing at me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because he did make it easier. This is straightforward. You do not have to be really smart to figure this out. He just told us the role that Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavua play in the fulfillment of the covenant's benefits. What he just laid out before us in no uncertain terms and tied it to the inheritance of the covenant so that, you know, if we want to pat ourselves on the back and say, boy, we were really smart to figure this out, well, with that.
Better be careful. I don't think I'll go there.
He really made it easy. He did make it easy. It's only man that has screwed it up and made it hard. He made it really easy.
I don't say we're smart, but we were dedicated. We took the time. We were motivated to do it.
Yeah.
Hey, well, that's one of the reasons. He wants you to be motivated. He wants you to try.
Well, that's
you to...
exactly. If you're not, he doesn't want to be part of, want you part of it.
No, if you just lays it all on your plate, what good is that? Then you know nothing about
you.
You
have a bunch of religious idiots. And people he's trying to avoid.
What you are saying is absolutely true. That is how I came to the conclusion that God deliberately made it hard. He didn't make it easy. That was my original conclusion. And I said the reason he didn't make it easy, because if he had made it easy, then eternity would be filled with very insincere, inappropriate people who are only there because they went right to the answer, memorized the answer, had no understanding of it, had no thirst for knowledge, and they were just doing it because they wanted to save their sorry souls.
Mm-hmm.
Not because they were excited to know who Yahweh is, not because they were passionate about learning, not because they had this quest to go on this voyage of discovery and to see where the words fled, not because they found such joy in understanding and finding new insights, not because they came to love the author of these words, thrilled by the idea of being part of God's family and exploring and learning throughout all time. And so you're right. God did not make it easy on purpose. Because if everyone that just recited the answers was led into heaven then heaven would be as hellish as earth. And if you can imagine an eternity with the kind of idiots that populate this earth politically, religiously, and militarily, that would be hell. So God had to make it hard, and he had to come up with a filtering mechanism to assure that those people who are going to spend eternity all have a number of things in common that are very important to God. They've all jettisoned, completely disavowed every aspect of religion and politics. That they've wiped those things from themselves.
Well, haven't you, I know, I've noticed over the 11 years now, there's been a lot of people who read these translations, even do a little bit of studying and get some basic fundamentals about it, but they have a tendency to walk off the path later if they ever were on it. You know, they can recite, they can fill them up. I think there's something you just so have to want it so bad. If you don't, I don't think you're going to get there, just because even if you laid it out, because it's laid out pretty easy once you get there, you'll reinforce it, and you do this, and you reinforce what you just learned, and reinforces again and again. That's what I've found in Yashiyahu. But I don't think, the guy that snores or the guy who wants something else, the two brothers of Abraham, they will. They won't stay.
Well, and again,
that's the reason anytime anyone asks any of us, what do I do to celebrate Passover? We tell them, come to understand what it means. We don't go, you got to eat this meal at this time, and you have to say this. No, it's come to know and understand what it means. If you're not willing to do that, then what you do on it actually has no
then
real
meaning. You're having dinner.
I would even have the meaning behind Passover. Don't celebrate Passover.
Yeah.
No.
Don't even think about it. So, Kirk, you made a really interesting point here. That, by making the criterion being right through empirical understanding, what God is saying here is that those who have parroted the answer, like so many did on, who are part of that despicable group, the unpopular truth, they parroted the answers. Now, many people have come through that swamp, and have come out wiser for having been there and seen how easy it is to be misled and manipulated, and have come to be extraordinarily passionate members of the covenant family. So I want to be really careful, because there are a number of people listening that I correspond to regularly that were once part of that have come clean of it. And the conspiracy theories that were there were a religion that they also had to walk away from, and they have done so. But all of those who were just so evil as part of that group were so maligning of others in the covenant. We are not going to have to endure their presence in eternity, even though they parroted these answers, because the test is such that you do have to have real understanding, and that does not come easily. And so here I'm saying that Yahweh is laughing at me for making this point that, why didn't he make it simpler and easier to understand? And the fact of the matter, he did make it simple and easy to understand. It's just that the only way you're going to get there is having the proper perspective and investing the time and loving the entire process to the point where, both of you guys, you find a word, you find a letter, you find a definition that causes you to be extraordinarily excited about the affirmations, the confirmations, and where it leads. So it says here, and the empowered, he will share and apportion that which is valuable. He is sharing. Why is he sharing? Because Yosha is the first of the firstborn of Bukudah. He left prior to Shavuah, because Shavuah is a product of the set apart spirit. But he was also a beneficiary of the set apart spirit. Mm-hmm. And so he's sharing this apportionment with us. He serves as an example of what it means to be a son or daughter of Yahweh. Based upon an orderly, sequential, and rational arrangement, tachat. Because to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, this is a great place for Asher, to provide an upright and elevated state, a joyful attitude, an encouraged mindset to those walking the correct way along the proper path to a prosperous life. He exposed and poured out, thereby eliminating the destructive vulnerabilities associated with the plague of death. He uncovered greater restraints and implications. And guys, that is the thing that I guess I have the hardest time with new ears explaining. When I tell them that religion is all a lie, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, that it's nothing but false hope, they then say, why would you criticize these things? Let everybody, okay, so it's false hope, but it's at least hope, and it provides some hope for people in desperate situations. Why would you take that away from people? Why? Because the truth is liberating. You want to be free? You have to be free of man's lies.
Well, if you're clinging to false hope, you'll never seek the truth.
Yeah. Well, even the word religion means to be rebound. It's religion, which means to be reattached. Religion. And so, the only way to be really free, to be completely liberated, to experience total and complete independence, is to be with Yahweh. You're not submitting to Him, and therefore under His control. You're under no one's control. You are totally and completely liberated. Yahweh is liberating. His instruction is liberating. This whole path that He has provided and planned are liberating. They're emancipating. You're emancipated from human corruption, whether it's religious, political, military, or economic. Total and complete liberation is what He's offering. Powerful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Free of the vulnerabilities associated with the restraints of the plague of death. Now, Christianity restrains. Doesn't liberate.
Boy, does.
Yeah, for all of human history, it was a means of controlling people. Never liberating them. His soul, his consciousness, his persona, was contemplated, assigned, and counted among those who indignantly revolted and offensively transgressed. Pasha, and there's so many Hebrew words like this. Pasha is not the word of, Kirk, I know that you swiped the pack of bubble gum. You better fess up. Or, you copied JB and filtered a copy of Microsoft Word. Told a little white lie. No, that's not Pasha. Pasha is collective wrongdoing.
Yeah.
It's a societal revolt against God.
Yes.
That is what is resolving, is a universal open insubordinates. Open insubordinates, Roman Catholicism. Open insubordinates, Rabbinic Judaism. Open insubordinates, every word, deed, and thought of Islam. Open insubordinates, Hasatan. Open insubordinates is egotistical kings, presidents, and prime ministers. These are societal ills. This is the thing that is wrong with mankind here. His soul was contemplated, assigned, and counted among those who indignantly revolted and offensively transgressed. The openly insubordinate, especially the recalcitrant, the flagrant criminals with a contrarian nature who deliberately infringe against the standard with errant approaches. He's talking about Sheol, hell.
Mm-hmm.
Which is with religious and political people. That's where his soul went. That are the people in hell. Hell is an extraordinarily religious place. Those who are insubordinate against God. Pasha.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's also from Pasha, which is to step and march into place, which is what they do. They go in single file or they go in multiples, marching in place with whatever the dictator is telling them or whatever the Pope is telling them or whatever the religion is telling them. We've all been trapped in that to some degree, whether it be political or other, till we finally saw the truth. But every aspect of it is that, yes. He just hates religion and politics because it's about the only thing that can really keep you away from him. Without that...
It not only keeps you away from him, but it's a plague that inflicts and kills
his children.
That's the preponderance of humanity.
Yeah.
You know, the deadliest plague that's ever been perpetrated on earth is Roman Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
There's no plague that's affected more people worldwide than Roman Catholicism. It's the deadliest thing man has ever conceived. Who indignantly revolted and offensively transgressed because he himself lifted up and carried away the checkup, the wrongdoing and offenses against the saints, the liability associated with these errors and judgments, the guilt that would also otherwise lead to incurring a penalty, punishment, and condemnation. Well, checkup is primarily wrongdoing against the standard. Yah only has one standard.
Yeah.
The Torah.
Yeah, it's going the wrong way. Pretty obvious, as opposed to the followers of the way.
So
you know, I found something else I want to try to, which was, it also means to sacrifice, which by transference becomes a sin. So they throw that little nugget in there is explains Yahusha again, or reveals Yahusha again.
Yes.
So, what a word.
Lift up, carry away. Can you explain to me how in the Christian presentation of death on a cross and bodily resurrection, there's any lifting up and carrying away? Where does the lifting up and carrying away take place when you're nailed to a Roman cross and you're killed by man? And
his
then
body was lifted up and carried away.
His body was beaten to a pulp, rises from a grave. Can you tell me where the carrying away takes place and the lifting up in that scenario? Please, I'm all ears, Christians. I mean, where does the lifting up take place? There isn't any.
Mm.
That's a nailing down, a burial down, and a degradation of the flesh. Just think about this for a moment. You know, what does the Torah teach on touching a dead body?
You're not to do that.
All right. So if Yosha, if Jesus, can he reach out his hands and tell old Thomas, touch me?
Yeah.
Can't do that, can he? If it was a dead body, well, what if he brought back alive? That doesn't change the fact that it was a dead body. Don't touch it.
Yeah. Well, all those stories are a bit suspect. When they contradict them in the Torah.
Right. Well, the fact of the matter is the physical manifestation of Yosha after the energy manifestation traveled in the blink of an eye from the walk that he was taking with the guys to Emmaus into the upper room and Jerusalem. Going through the wall, that was a energy-based manifestation of God. And then as he transformed himself into a physical manifestation, there is no body that's associated with death there. At the point that he is now immersed in the set-apart spirit and therefore energized, there's no death associated with that at all. So, he very well could have said that.
Yeah.
Nothing inappropriate with that. But if you don't understand it in terms of an entirely different construct, like the transition from matter to energy and then back to matter, then the explanation would go against the Torah.
Now, when he told the women in the tomb, "Don't touch me," is that because he's so empowered at this stage that he could actually hurt them by them touching him?
Yeah, absolutely. Don't touch me. Yeah, we've gone to the Father yet. Yeah, don't touch me. Yeah, we kill him. Absolutely, he's immersed in the set-apart spirit. And what is it that he carried away? The wrongdoing, the offenses against the standard, errors in judgment, shachetah. And therefore, on behalf of those who have asha, rebelled, trespassed against the standard with errant steps, he intercedes, he paga. He spares in a manner which is helpful, beneficial, reaching out and meeting with them while pleading their case. It is a marvelous presentation of the formula, the plan that Yahweh devised and he himself carried out. He talked the talk, he walked the walk. Go ahead.
I was going to say on Paga, not only is it he intercedes or he's an intercessor, but it also means to come together to meeting or a place of meeting. And I surmise that was Pesach, Masa, or Bikurim, or on the Mount of Moria. So there's another connection there. It's just, I used to not write all the different little definitions down if I didn't think they were appropriate, and more I do now, the more I can say, that's
find out how they all apply.
Another little layer, and another little layer, and another little connection, and another connection. They may be minor, but it's gratifying that there's so many of them. You just go, wow.
Correct.
So.
Correct. Now, I want to transition from this, the chapter progresses, to something that, for me, was one of the great eye-openers, because the crucible of Pauline Christianity is Paul's rebuttal to Shimon Tepesh and Yaakov at the Jerusalem Council. When they brought Paul in and said, you claim you're speaking for Yosha, and yet everything you're saying is the antithesis of what they're saying. Your whole diatribe against circumcision. If you're circumcised, you can't be saved. Well, then guess what? Yosha couldn't be saved. Jesus couldn't be saved if circumcision is counterproductive. None of the disciples
were saved. They were all Yehudi.
They can't be saved because they were all circumcised. Can't be a Saint Peter because he couldn't be saved because he was circumcised. And by the way, can't be a Saint Paul. He can't be saved because guess what?
He was circumcised.
You were circumcised.
Good God, Christian. Thank you. So, Paul makes the claim that it's faith, not the Torah. And he says, proof of this is that Abraham believed and he didn't have the Torah. That's 0-2. There was no faith. Abraham had no faith. Matter of fact, not only did Abraham eventually come to know and understand, which is infinitely superior to faith, in fact, it's the inverse of faith. When before Abraham understood, he had no faith. So it's not that like Abraham went from, I believe God, to knowing God. He didn't start with believing God. When he first said, I'm going to give you this inheritance, he says, come on. What good is an inheritance to me? I have no understanding of this. I don't have an heir. He didn't go from believing God to knowing God. At no time was belief any part of Abraham's vocabulary. But eventually he came to know and understand, and Yahweh accredited his knowledge and understanding, his response for being right. So that part's wrong. And the second part's wrong too, because Yahweh in Bereshit 26, 3 through 5, explains emphatically that Yahweh gave his Torah to Abraham. So if you're acquainted with the fact, if you read the first book that you're carrying around, Christian, Genesis, Bereshit, it's an absolute conflict with what Paul wrote. Which means Paul has to be wrong, because he claims to have been chosen to communicate the message of that very same God.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
When Yahweh showed the light to Abraham, he not only benefited, he understood, and he was happy about the whole thing. When whoever this God was that showed the light to Paul, he blinded him for 2 weeks. And he,
Did
that register with anyone?
Here's the light that Yahweh's soul was immersed in. Was totally fulfilling, empowering, enriching with great abundance, and yet the light that struck Paul was debilitating, made him lame and blind. It's all there, just if only you're willing to think. You know the Dr. Seuss line, oh, the things you can think, if only you try.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't. If your mind is polluted with religious mush, if you believe the Pope is a good man and that he speaks for God and that religions all lead to God and that your religion will save you and that faith has value and that Jesus is Lord and he wants to be worshipped, then your mind is so polluted, your thinking is so corrupted that no amount of knowledge or information, even Yahweh's word correctly translated, will do you any good at all.
And it's just like we were talking about with the Pope earlier, it's the same thing with Paul. If you believe someone can both speak for God and contradict God at the same time, you're insane and there is no hope for you.
That's correct. You're an idiot. You're an idiot. And as an idiot, I don't want to spend eternity with you. Lord God. You're an irrational idiot. If you believe that someone can speak for God and contradict God at the same time. And if you're not aware that Paul contradicted everything that God said, if you don't know what God said, you don't know what Paul said. Shame on you. You know,
there's hope for you still if you're ignorant. You can think you're ignorant.
Question to Paul.
But if you're ignorant, if you continue to be ignorant about something as important as who God is, what he is offering, and who he is not, and what he isn't offering, if you choose to be ignorant on that topic, then the chances are that you are never, ever going to know the truth.
Yeah.
So many people that I talk to and I share what I have learned and begin to hint at, I say, well, you know, all I really care about is that, you know, one time my daughter or son was sick and I prayed and, you know, and they were ultimately spared and that's good enough for me. Or I just, everybody can believe whatever they want. What I believe is as follows. And that's really all I care about. Huh. If that's your mindset, if you're going to be ignorant of what God said and ignorant of his instruction, then there's no hope for you. There's no hope.
That's fine. You go on. Go ahead and do that. Just shut up and don't talk to me about it and quit trying to make policy based on that.
It isn't all right. It's not helpful that you are misled. Your opinions are irrelevant. Your faith is irrelevant. Your prayers are irrelevant. Your pleas with God are irrelevant. He doesn't know who the hell you are. He doesn't care. It's not listening to you. He doesn't know you. He isn't going to save you. So if you choose of your own volition to dwell as a guest, as a dependent child, if you genuinely want to explore and reside in this land, in this realm, before we go on to anything more, let's just talk about this beginning of Bereshit 26:3. It was written in the call imperative. So this is, and now we're speaking to Yishak here. This is saying, it's your choice, free will and all. You want to live in this realm? If you want to live in this realm, and you choose of your own volition to dwell in it as a goer, as a guest, well, how could Yishak be a guest if the land was given to dear old dad and he inherited? How could he be a guest in land that was given to his dad? Can you explain that to me?
Yeah. No.
You can't? I understand how Yishak can be a guest in land that was given to his dad. The reason is the land, the realm, belongs to Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
It's his. We're a guest in his home. Yes, we are. We're invited guests into his home. It's his land. It's his universe. It's Israel is his. Yahudah is his. Jerusalem is his. Mount Moriah is his.
But that's what Gur means, though.
Yes. Dwelling as a guest. I'm happy to be a guest in Yahweh's home.
Yeah.
I have chosen to dwell as a guest in Yahweh's home. As a matter of fact, as a goyim, I am pretty happy to be a guest in Yahweh's home. But you know, Gur means more than guest. It means a dependent child. Okay. Isn't that the whole concept? To be part of the covenant, we become Yahweh's sons and daughters. We're his child. We are dependent children. And rather than depending on human, political, economic, and religious schemes, we are depending upon the plan that Yahweh has provided. So we are dependent children. If you choose of your own volition to dwell as a dependent child, and you want to genuinely explore and reside. So, you've chosen to be a dependent child. Very, very important. Because that means you're not depending on man and you're viewing yourself as a child of Yahweh. And you genuinely want to explore, which is a prerequisite for being invited into Yahweh's home and living with him. You have to want to explore and to reside in this land. Ha, Eretz, Ha, Zot. Ha is the definite article. Zot means this specific realm or region. So in this specific realm, this one, you know, you can live any place you want to, but if you want to live in this realm or region, Israel, Yahudah, Jerusalem, Mount Moriah, you want to live in Yahweh's home, in his place. Then he says, I will choose to be Haya. I was, I will, and I am. Am Ata. You always see those bumper stickers, you know, that God bless America and support our troops, and a troop bowing down before the cross and all this kind of stuff, or God support our troops. And, you know, all the political candidates that, you know, may God bless you. Everybody that's ever gone into battle, everyone who has ever run for public office, thinks they're on God's side. What I want is real simple. I want God to be with me. I just want him to be with me. That's good enough for me. And he says, if you choose of your own volition to dwell as a dependent child and to genuinely explore, choosing to reside in this specific realm, Yisrael. This is the Eretz. This sure as hell ain't Rome. This isn't the world of Roman Catholicism. This isn't Mecca. This isn't the realm of Islamic perversion. This isn't the Hollywood movie scene. This isn't the economic power of New York or the political clout of Washington. This is Israel. This is the place that Christians throughout the ages have loathed. You want to live there with God, and He'll be with you. That does infer, by the way, if you choose not to reside with Yahweh in the place that He calls home, that He's not with you. Now, it doesn't say that. It just says, if you choose to explore and to live here, I will be with you, because He's there. But it sure does elevate the importance of Israel. To have a pope, you know, pretend like it belongs to the Palestinians just shows how far off the thinking of a religious leader can be. And then it says, this next line is, I guess defines my understanding of God better than any other. And it's so contrary to religion. And indeed, I will kneel down in love to bless you, to lift you up. I will diminish and lower myself to greet and favor you, creating a better circumstance through you. I will enrich you. I'm going to kneel down to lift you up in love. That's what fathers do. Lords do the opposite. Lords require their subjects to bow down before them. Fathers will never allow their child to bow down before them, and a father is always of the business of lifting their child up. Yahweh is a father, not a lord. An Av, not a Baal. That is what's being conveyed here. This idea of worshiping the Lord, worshiping Jesus, is so utterly stupid. It's so disgusting and repulsive, moronic, to think that the Creator would create an inferior being to worship Him is so insulting. To think that we as puny humans can lift God up in praise, it's just ridiculous. And it flies in the face of the entire purpose of the covenant.
Just the symbolism of bowing down is diminishing yourself, and usually in the sense of groveling. It's so contrary to what He wants to do for you, the whole thing becomes meaningless. You go, are you kidding? How could it possibly be in His best interest or in His desire to tell a story?
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. The way you look at it, it's impossible to come up with bowing down.
Yeah, the whole concept
and the hay is standing up, reaching up.
Yeah, the whole idea of Yahweh getting down to lift us up, diminishing Himself to raise us, is not only in direct opposition to every religious concept and every religion man has ever created, but it's absolutely consistent with the nature of the covenant family. And it's the best way to understand God. Why does God choose a word for right, tzedakah? That means to stand upright.
Stand upright, yeah.
Right. You're not lifting God up, but you're not bowing down before Him if you're standing upright. Why are there two people in Yahweh's name and both of them are standing up and reaching up for His hand if God wanted us on our knees bowing down in prayer to Him?
I'm sure He can draw somebody bowing down.
I'm sure He can. And you know, there's not a single letter of somebody bending over, much less bowing down.
No.
You know, if He wanted to say the answer, the solution to life is to pray to Me, you'd think He would have said that at least once somewhere in His Torah teaching.
Somewhere.
But He didn't. You would think if God wanted us to lift Him up in praise, that He would say, I will kneel down in love to lift you up. You wouldn't think if the idea was for us to bow down, that the Hebrew word for being right, being vindicated, is also the Hebrew word for standing upright. it all fits, but only fits if you have the right perspective. It's why so many times over and over again, I said, if you want to learn to translate, the key to translating is having the right perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know who Yahweh is and what he's offering, and then the words in every context will make sense to you. If you don't know who he is and what he's offering, what he's trying to convey, you can study the words, but coming up with the correct meaning isn't something that's going to resonate within you. To you and for you to approach, and on behalf of your offspring, accordingly, I will give all of God's realm. What do we inherit? Everything our dad has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
What does dad have to offer?
Everything in eons of time and everything through every dimension of dimension.
Well, he's not just an entire universe. He's offering to let us witness the creation of a new universe. He's offering us an eternity in a new universe. He's offering us an eternity in this process. He's offering us absolute perfection. He's offering us unimaginable empowerment. He's offering to make us his sons and daughters. He's given us the opportunity to explore forever, to celebrate life. It's a pretty powerful package that he is presenting before us.
Mm-hmm.
I will give, Nathan, I will entrust all of God's coming. It's interesting here, by the way, that Eretz was plural in this case. God's got a lot more than Israel. He's got a lot more than Yahweh. He's got a lot more than the Middle East. He's got a lot more than this puny planet.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot more than this solar system. He's got a lot more than the galaxy, the Milky Way at which it resides. He's got a lot more than this universe. He doesn't just have the 3.5 dimensions that we perceive to offer. He's offering us 7. It's a lot. And he says, and I will take a stand, establish in fruition and confirm. Boom. I will stand upright, completely fulfill, accomplish, and validate. Therefore, the solemn promise, the ha-shabuah, or shabuah, or explain the purpose of shabuah, the promise, the truthful witness regarding 7. The binding pledge of the Shabbat. The affirmation of the sworn testimony. So I will take a stand, establish, and bring into fruition and confirm there the sworn testimony regarding the contractual agreement between the parties. The truthful witness of 7, the binding pledge. Which to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, Asher, the correct way, the proper path to a prosperous life. I Shabbat, I swore, I promised to Abraham, your father. Just as Abraham serves as the father of the covenant and the father of Yishak, who became the father of Yaakov, who became the father of Yisrael, Yahweh in the covenant is the father of all of his covenant. So he is. Just as Abraham was your father, I will be your father, is what he's telling him. Bomber seed, Genesis 26:3.
And he's also telling us that, you know, there's the covenant has been told to Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
You can't miss that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that you should all not miss is that the text that Abraham and Yishak were asked to take regarding their knowledge and understanding and acceptance of the terms and conditions of the covenant, which is the same test that we must all take and pass. That this test is an open book test. All of the answers are written in the Torah. And so it would be foolish of us not to know the Torah. There's no way to pass the test of the Torah. And here, God is actually going to say that I gave Abraham the Torah. Why? So he'll get past the test. I want you to pass the test. Here it is. Open book.
That's funny.
And it says, I will grow and thrive. I will increase, becoming greater by rearing offspring. And your offspring, with your offspring, in connection with the highest and most illuminated spiritual realm of the heavens. It is a little known fact, but God grows. God is bigger today than he was yesterday. God will be greater tomorrow than he is today. If he did not grow, he would be finite.
Yeah.
No matter how big he is, the moment he stops growing, he becomes finite. He only is infinite when he grows. And what he's saying here, there is a way for him to grow, and the way that he grows is through relationships.
Yeah. So how's that a hang up for so many people? Because it seems to be.
And that's the reason the earth exists, the universe exists, life exists, we exist, the Torah exists, Yosha came to serve the Pesach lamb, that matzah was fulfilled by Yahweh's soul, that he was fulfilled and enriched by the light of the set-apart spirit on the Kodam. Honoring the promises of Shavuot was because Yahweh can only grow when he is engaged in raising his children and serving as their father. And I will grow and thrive, Rabbah. I will increase, becoming greater, by rearing offspring and continuing to remain with your offspring in connection with, corresponding to, the highest and most illuminated of the spiritual realms. Where is Yahweh going to grow with us? Seventh dimension. It's the highest of the spiritual realms. Seventh dimension. It's as high as it goes. And that is where Yahweh is going to grow with us in this Kokhab. You know, and Kokhab, by the way, should tie our thinking together, because when Abraham didn't understand what he was inheriting, Yahweh took him to the Kokhab. This is what he took him to. And he interspersed, connected the Kokhab with Shamayim, the spiritual realm. It's being done again here. It's to reinforce that the spiritual realm and the light of the stars are similar and related concepts. And they have all to do with the benefits of the covenant of being immortal, everlasting in time, being perfect, being enriched, being empowered, being enlightened.
Let me share something with Kokhab, which is kind of interesting. Is stars, light energy, stargazer, see the stars. It is also a place in Yehuda.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a pretty good connection with Abraham and Yishak.
No missing. And so, in addition, I will give Nathan, your offspring, everything associated with these godly realms. Well, there's a lot of things associated with the realms of the universe, of the highest level and the light of the Shamayim of the heavens. One of the things there is the vastness of it, the liberation of it, the enlightenment of it, the empowerment of it, the scale of it. It's filled with life. It's filled with lessons. It's filled with things to explore, things to entertain. So I'm going to give you all of it, everything that there is to be associated with these realms, which is all the benefits of the covenant. Takes us right back to Eden. This is an addition. I'm going to give your offspring everything associated with these godly realms. So through your descendants, your offspring, and extended family will be blessed with unfavorable circumstances. All the goyim, the people and races on the earth. And truthfully, 100% of what Yahweh revealed was revealed through the descendants of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob.
Yeah.
God doesn't reveal fresh revelations through us goyim.
No.
Now, there are a lot of us goyim who are studying Yahweh's testimony that he made through Yisrael and through Yahudah. They're celebrating the insights that are provided, the lessons, the teachings that were provided in. But we're not claiming that we have fresh revelation. We're just simply sharing the revelation that benefited every race on earth that was given through Yisrael.
Yeah.
This covenant that was conceived and celebrated through Abraham, Yitzhak, and Jacob, and therefore Yisrael and Yahudah, it's everyone's benefit. The Torah that was conveyed through a descendant of Abraham and Yitzhak, Moshe, it's for everyone's benefit. That prophetic witness that we just considered in Yeshayah was an eyewitness account of exactly the reason behind that the purpose of Pesach, Matzah, Bekodim, and Shavuot. Well, Yeshayah was a descendant of Abraham and Yitzhak. The Pope isn't. Muhammad wasn't. Joseph Smith wasn't.
No.
So through your descendants will be blessed with favorable circumstances, every people and race on the earth. And we still haven't gotten to the good part. This is the good part.
Okay.
And by the way, what that says is, it is Yisrael. It is ethnically Yahudim, Israel and Jews that provide the blessings to humankind. It is Yahweh's witness through them. And so when they are enemies, when they are discredited, when the Yahweh's testimony through them is discredited, when people become hostile to Jews, they're foregoing, forsaking God's blessings. That is the dumbest thing you could possibly do, be anti-Semitic. If you are, you are forsaking Yahweh's blessing. And I will grow and thrive with your offspring in conjunction with the highest, most illuminated of the heavens. That's just stunning. This is because, God says, to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, Abraham, Shama, pray to me? No. Have faith in me?
No.
No. Surrendered to me? No. Submitted to me? No. Obeyed me? No. Bow down before me? No. Worshipped me? No. What did Abraham do?
Well,
Shamar. Response.
Right. Yeah. He's Shamar. He listened to, he heard, he used his perception of hearing to process Yahweh's voice. I've had occasion more recently as I've met new people, as I move on with my life, to tell people the story that I was always reluctant to share until fairly recently. In fact, it wasn't until we started Observations for a Time that I began to share the story openly of how Yahweh one day introduced himself to me and asked me to do something that I was unqualified to do and was reluctant to do. And people think, boy, if you think that God talked to you, you are an absolute nut job. And I didn't feel comfortable about it, sharing this, because I didn't want to give the impression that God gave me any new revelation, because he didn't. Now, my only purpose is to correctly translate what he had already revealed and then make the connections that were necessary to understand it so that it can be shared with others in a way that will resonate with them, where the truth becomes knowable, where Yahweh's invitations become actionable, where people can understand who he is and what he's offering based upon what he has revealed. And then you read about how excited Yahweh is to use this stem of this choder, who devoted so much of his life to composing a neck, a sign, comprised of Yahweh's testimony, which Yahweh himself has lifted up. And you read that, and you have this reassurance that God is celebrating this. And so I began to tell this story. And what I keep on telling people is that God speaks to all of us. And 99.999% of the time he speaks to me, to the time that he speaks to you, Kirk, the time he speaks to you, JV, is when we read his testimony aloud. That's when he's speaking to us.
Yeah.
And he speaks clearly, openly, intelligently, reasonably, rationally, with great joy. Abraham did what we do. Listen to God, not to the Pope, not to the President. Not to Hollywood.
Pastor, priest, or rabbi.
Right. He listened to Yahweh. Abraham, Shama, my voice, Bakole, the way I speak. And just in case you thought that, well, that must have been that he simply had this benefit that we all don't have, that he, you know, listened to Yahweh talk personally to him, and that was really it. We don't have that same opportunity. He then followed, and he visually observed and carefully considered, and then he's going to go into some of the most important terms in the world, one of which is Torah. He was not just a good listener of what Yahweh had to say, he was observant. You observe with your eyes. And in the case of words, that means you're reading them. So if you Shama and Shamar both, you are reading the text that Yahweh has written down for our benefit, and you're reciting it aloud and listening to his words as we read them. You want to listen to God and observe what he has to say, then read, this is because, to show the way to the benefits of the relationship, Abraham listened to my voice, and he observed and carefully considered. And then there's this list of things that follows. No faith, no worship, no surrender, no submitting, no acquiescing. Listened and observed. The first is my requirements and my responsibility. Mishmereth. My verbalized expressions regarding my mission to provide safeguards and my obligation to fulfill them from Mashal, vivid and easily remembered proverbs and parables, providing wisdom through representation and comparison, and Shamar to observe. Wow, what a powerful term. What a beautiful blend. They listened to Yahweh's expressions regarding his mission. They listened to Yahweh's obligations to fulfill the vivid and easily remembered proverbs and parables that he had communicated to us. The wisdom through representation. It's so wonderful that Observations for Our Time begins with two Mashal. Mashal 6, Mashal 7. So this begins where we began. That is where we were observant. That is where we listened to what Yahweh had to say. This is Mashal Proverbs 6 and 7. They listened to my expressions regarding my mission and my obligation to fulfill them. These vividly and easily remembered proverbs, parables, providing wisdom. Then the next is my directions. This is what else he listened to and observe. my directions and conditions of the contract, mitzvah, my binding instructions regarding my contractual agreement, and my authorized directions regarding the codicils of the relationship, mitzvah. My inscribed and clearly communicated prescriptions for the tshuva, my engraved in this written statement that had been chiseled into stone to communicate how one should respond to be cut into the relationship. Isn't that a marvelous term? It's one of the terms that permeates, of course,
Psalm 119.
And my Torah. Is there any question that says, and Torah? Yeah.
Back to Paul. He's in the water now.
If you're this Jew, you're screwed because it's Yahweh's Torah, not the rabbinic oral law. Screwed, blued, and tattooed if you're a religious Jew. Doesn't say my Quran left in the dust if you're a Muslim. Doesn't say my New Testament. Doesn't say my Bible. Doesn't say my church. Because God doesn't have a New Testament. He doesn't have a Bible. He doesn't have a church. He said, because Abraham listened to his voice and observed his Torah. Abraham was Torah observant. That's why he's right with God. Yosha was Torah observant. That's why he was right with God. We are Torah observant, which is why we're right with God. But there's no question here, folks. Paul was wrong when he says that Abraham didn't have the Torah and he succeeded on faith, when this says just the opposite. That Abraham listened to what God had to say and observed what he had written in his Torah. Where do you find the mitzvah? In the Torah. Where do you find it? In the Torah.
In the Torah.
Yeah,
where did Yosha tell everybody to go to find the answers?
Open book test.
Torah. Yeah,
Abraham could not have passed the open book test without Yahweh's guidance at the sound of the Torah. We can't find our way to God without Yahweh's directions and guidance as they are in His Torah. It was Yahweh's instructions for Abraham that brought him to Mount Moriah and his realization that Yahweh was providing the sacrificial lamb. It is our observance of the same book, the same teaching, the same guidance that bring us to the same place, the same insights, the same conclusions. But there's no question, none at all, that Yahweh provided his Torah, Abraham, and therefore Paul's letters are a lie.
Rubbish.
Therefore, Pauline Christianity, the religion that is based on Paul's letters, is a lie. Its very premise is a lie. False hope is worse than no hope. And so,
yeah, how was I'm sorry.
It's essential that people understand these things and how important it is to have an appreciation of what God gave to Abraham and how Abraham responded. He listened to and observed Yahweh's Torah. And if we want to be in the same position with Abraham, so that God can say the same thing of us, this is because, to show the ways and the benefits of the relationship, Abraham listened to my voice, and he observed and considered my Torah. There's a clue, folks. Abraham was Yahweh's Torah. If we want to be Yahweh's child, we better do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And by the way, guess who else did these things? Moshe.
Oh, yeah.
Yosha.
Every family member.
Every family member without exception.
If I was starting to translate again, and I didn't ever translate it before, I would suggest you turn to Genesis 26:5, which you've just read, The last five words are best place in the world to start. Shamar, Mishmeres, Mitzvah, Shok, Tor. I look up Yahweh's name, too. Just those five. If that's all Abraham needed, by gosh, that's all you need to know for a long time.
Yeah.
And just keep digging for fun.
I would say it's not five words, but seven. Because I would go to that. Shama Kol.
Okay.
He listened to my voice. Shama Kol. And then the five words. Shamar, observe. Mishmeret. A mitzvah. Tuka. And Torah. It's really seven, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your five.
My voice, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Your answer to five is correct. So I'm not invalidating what you said. You're right. Those five.
Oh, I know. I mean, you can expand it. You can keep going, but yes, indeed.
But seven is really important because it's not just observing what Yahweh had to teach us and to instruct us and to guide us. It's listening to what he has to say, is that. Recognizing that when you read the Torah, you're listening to your Heavenly Father speak to you.
Mm-hmm.
To teach you, to guide you. To enrich you. To enlighten you. The source of power. The source of enrichment. That's where it all comes from.
When you shamar Torah, you've got to feel like I do. You've got to feel like you're sitting there with Yahweh listening. You're learning from Him. I mean, I don't know how you could not feel that way doing what we all do. I mean, it's just a wonderful several hours, you know, whatever time you can allot for it. It's just terrific. I mean, what could be better?
When I certainly feel the closest and
uh-huh. Me too.
Yeah. Yeah, and so like when people want to hear, why did you go off and do this thing on Islam? You know, then why did you write all these books? Because Yahweh asked me. Well, I mean, God talked to me, yes. He did. Talked to me every day. Every day of my life, he talked to me. And I listened to him. He talked to all of those of us who are willing to listen to him every day. Just read and recite what he has to say.
Well, they ask everybody to condemn, you know, nobody did it as well, but you know, he obviously wants you to condemn Islam, he wants you to condemn social secular humanism and Christianity and rabbinical mm-hmm. Judaism.
Yeah, he shouldn't have had to ask.
Yeah, he should not have had to ask.
Right. I didn't know him at the time, so he did. It was nice of him. He shouldn't have had to ask Moshe and Moses to lead his children out of Israel. Shouldn't have been asked. But he did. Because that's his nature. Thank you, guys. I'm broadcasting today from Ohio. The last time we were together, I was in South Florida. So I've been all around, and if it wasn't for JD opening up the chat room and I was calling in as a guest on the guest line, we wouldn't be able to do this, and yet thankfully where we might be, we can do that. Now, I want to close with one thought. I closed with kind of a shocking statement last week for those that listened to the archive of the show. And I want to close with a thought today. I am way behind in my email. I'm really a little bit of a vagabond right now. There's no real place that I'm calling home. I am, as you can see, was one show, it was Nantucket, and another one was Ohio, Cincinnati, and then Dayton and South Florida. Charlottesville at one time in between all those. I'm a vagabond. And I have some both positive and amazing things that are happening, and some really, really, really unbelievably awful things that are happening. And so the two things that have suffered during all of this is, I'm still two chapters away from completing the second volume of Yada Yada. I'll get back to it. And I'm really not diligent now on my email. There's so many of you written. I've come on some people even written and said, you know, if I offend you in some way, did I say something that I shouldn't have said? No, it's nothing to do with you. It has all to do with me. I'm just in a spot in my life right now where I need some room. And I need some time. I don't really have a home, a place that I can just devote to this as I'm striving to open this new chapter in my life and close one that has been very painful to me and open one that is really very enjoyable to me. So that's where I am, and I'm sorry for not being diligent about answering emails, and I will get back to them. I wanted to say that at the end of this program.
We all know you got a lot on your plate, so we appreciate you taking the time to be here on Friday night.
That's really great. Yeah, it's a great joy. And I share the fact that, you know, I've got some burden that I'm enduring. It's for any other reason than just that, you know, there are transitions in life. This is the most liberating and enjoyable transition of, you know, apart from the things of God, which are the most, of course, the ultimate transitions. My wife is really, my ex-wife has become really vicious towards me. And said some just awful things. And it's really, really hurtful to now have someone that you spent all of those years with just turn to be so negative. And so I'm trying to survive that assault. You know, I'm here to see my granddaughter tomorrow, and yet I can't even sleep in my own house because I have to be cautious. I can't even be in the same house where my ex is without an adult witness. So those things are difficult. But at the same time, I'm liberated from something that became very painful. And the liberation is joyful. Oh, yes, I'm new relationships that are so uplifting, so much fun, and it seems life can be when you're around people that are positive and uplifting and joyful and adventurous. So, I'm not looking for any sympathy here, but I think if I don't share this transition, and some of you are writing me and wondering why I'm not, you know, this, on top of the business of the family of Yah as I have been for the past 16 or 17 years, this is the reason, and so I thought it was important for you to know. And I'm not saying it for any reason that I thought it was important for you to know, so that you do not think that I'm neglecting you. It's just that this is a time where I just don't have a lot of time to set apart to respond to the emails and to translate. One of the things that I have recently done, I was accepted today, is I did buy a boat. I'm going to live a board boat in Florida. It's something, again, I think you all know. I have a spirit of adventure. A voyage of discovery means a lot to me. And so, and the water, the ocean, is something that I find very uplifting. And so I'm going to live aboard a boat in a place that I really like, the warmth and the of the waters and the life that is in South Florida. And so I'm a little bored about it. And it was confirmed today. And the first thing that I'm having built on that boat is my study.
Well.
And you can't ever going to find a boat like I have with a study. And yet the highest boat in this boat, in the pilot house of this boat, I'm having a carpenter build me a study, where I'm surrounded by light and views and vistas, which is important to me when I write. I really want the views and the vista. It gives me perspective. It makes me feel whole and complete and uplifted. So right there at the very top, I'm going to have my computer, I'm going to have my monitor, I'm going to have my keyboard, and I'm going to have my study right there. And that's the first thing that's being built. So I will get back to it. I will have that as my home. And I'm trying desperately to sell all things that are connected with my past life so I can start afresh in this regard. So, that is my present reality, and it is far more joyful than it is painful, but it has lots of hope.
Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, guys, for participating. Thank you, JB, for getting this chat room up, switchboard, letting me call them. Thank you, Kurt, for this far-reaching story on the Torah and the Torah's role in Yah's relationship with Abraham. And you said, you know, we may have covered those last chapters of Yeshayah, but let's go back to them, reemphasize the lesson. I'm really glad you did. Thank you for that. That was the right call.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
I always enjoy it. You and me.
So from the time I read it and say, oh, we've covered that. So that's because I've been over it, you know, 15 times myself, and sometimes it's hard to pull myself out of it and say, okay, well, we've covered that. Yeah, I covered it 15 times.
It never gets old.
Yeah, I haven't shared it to be as part of this program, so thank you for bringing me back to that. All right, good night, guys.
Okay, bye. Shalom.
Right, shalom.
Talk to you next week.
Good night.